Good afternoon. This is Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm William English, and today's show is a tribute to Malcolm McLaren, who died last week. Well, once upon a time, I travelled down to London from Leicester to visit a shop on the King's Road called Paradise Garage, which was owned by Trevor Miles, who was photographed by my friend David Parkinson, sitting on the bonnet of a zebra skin flocked car outside the shop. Another friend of mine, John Cramporn, bought some white overalls from that shop with the word Firestone stitched in red across the back, which was slightly ironic as he later became a tyre fitter in Leicester. The next time we visited the shop, it was under new ownership, renamed Let It Rock. And that was the first time I met Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood. I remember Bakelite radios on the pavement, and I bought an American Fleck jacket and some obscure singles on the King label. On subsequent visits, the shop changed its identity to Too Fast to Live, Too Young to Die, and then Sex, which is when I took some photographs of Vivian Westwood in various rubber and leather garments, posing in front of a sculpture of a severed leg with livid boils and blisters at the top of the thigh. Whilst I try and assemble my notes. Severed leg, which seems to have livid boils and blisters at the top of the thigh. One of these images, signed in gold by Vivian, is coming up in the Resonance auction on May the 1st. It was always possible to chat with Malcolm and Vivian in the shop, and then eventually my friend Dave Parkinson told me he had encountered Malcolm in Mayfair one evening, and Malcolm had adopted yet another persona. His hair was up and permed, and he was wearing tight black leather trousers with tassels and a small grey sports jacket. And he mentioned that he was now managing a band. And so, one Sunday afternoon, we found ourselves in a small strip club or porn cinema, or whatever it was, on Brewer Street, and witnessed the Sex Pistols live on stage to a fairly bemused audience of about 40 people at the time. And I thought it was some sort of hoax, like a bad painting or something. Well, the rest is well documented. The last time I saw Malcolm was about 2 years ago in Paris. He was having an argument with a woman in Saint-Sulpice Square. I passed within a few feet of him, but we decided not to encroach on what was obviously a private discussion. So anyway, this program is a tribute to an extraordinary character. And this first track is from a compilation CD of 20 records, which were on the jukebox in Sex, assembled by the CD, that is, was assembled by Marco Pironi, and was sort of typical of the sort of music you might hear in the shop at that time. And after that, we go straight to an extended version of No Fun by the original Sex Pistols before Sid Vicious joined them. I'll travel.
Here we go now. A sociology lecture with a bit of psychology, a bit of neurology, a bit of fuckology. We'll be right back.
phenomenon that burst onto the scene that I had witnessed by going to a party in the Bronx one Saturday night. I was walking down the street in Harlem. It was in 1980. I had at that time been managing a group called Bow Wow Wow, and they were to play the following night at the Roxy Club, and I happened just to take a walk through Harlem, and I was on 125th Street, and I saw across the road, it was a bright sunny day, a huge black guy, massive man, but the most extraordinary thing about him was that he had a t-shirt on which said, "Never mind the bollocks, here's the Sex Pistols." And I thought, what's that big black guy in Harlem doing with a t-shirt like that? So I had to cross the road and just confront him, really. And I said, "You know what that t-shirt represents?" You know, and we started to talk, and he finally turned around and said, "I love the Sex Pistols." I said, "Wow." He said, "Yeah." And he said, "I didn't know you." He said, "Yeah, I know your name, but I've never met you before." And I said, "Well," he said, "why don't you come and see what we're doing? I'm holding a party tonight in the South Bronx." He gave me this address and told me his name was Afrika Bambaataa. So curious, I went to check back in my hotel in Midtown Manhattan and tried to get a cab that evening. It was impossible. Nobody wanted to go to this part of New York. There would be no way to get a cab like this back to Midtown Manhattan. You'd have to get a gypsy cab. Anyway, he started to make me a little bit nervous, but I carried on the journey and I eventually arrived at the address, but the address was the address of a waste ground. And this waste ground was just filled with black guys. And it was dark, there was no real street lights. So I was, to be frank, very nervous. But anyhow, I'd arrived, so I got out of the cab, slammed the guy's door shut, and started to walk into this huge throng of people. And I thought, I'm the only white guy here. So I sort of tried to take on this attitude of being some kind of American A&R man from a big important record company, and I waded my way through this crowd, trying to part it like the waves, you know? And this guy, Afrika Bambaataa, for all intents and purposes, turned out to be a kind of a bouncer, a guy who seemingly had a gang of kids, and this was his party, and he was protecting his equipment or whatever. And he was shining with a couple of his friends these large torches onto the decks where kids were acting almost like witch doctors, struggling with these decks, turning records around and using the needle like a guitar, you know, scratching certain grooves and spinning them backwards and forwards. And the guys were sort of handing each other microphones and just suddenly stepping into the throng and starting to tell stories, what ultimately I realized became known as rap. And they made sense of it all in some ways. It was about recycling. You could almost suggest it was ecological in that sense. They were making music out of all this old, no one cared rubbish that had long gone, you know, disposable pop music. I talked to Afrika Bambaataa for a little while and I said, "Put this on stage. Have you ever been to done a show in New York in any way?" And of course, no, they never had. that Monday night, the backstage, they couldn't get in, there was a big kerfuffle at the door. This group was not a typical group. There were people with spray can, graffiti across their t-shirts. They had a kind of a look that was totally different from anything anybody had genuinely witnessed before. The guys in the front row of what Afrika Bambaataa called his Zulu Nation suddenly jumped off the stage into this melting pot of white middle-class college kids and just fled
this world,
reeled back
bring to
these guys
those
starting to bounce on their heads.
Building
the
sexist
fled upstairs to the balcony for safety, assumingly. And the following day, I went
it's
to
getting
RCA
late.
Records,
very late.
The record company at Bower Outset.
Almost dawn,
what
I must go.
What you last night, Frederick Snow.
The flowers prepare to take their revenge.
You must try to sign this out.
And as they die,
you
they raise
know
a
what's
fact.
Good for you. I highly recommend
bye
you really try to
bye
induce,
bye.
Seduce.
Desperate.
And inspire this A&R
to grasp the last kiss
to really take what they had seen that night before seriously. Anyway, they couldn't. They said, that's black music, you must go across the corridor. Now, but maybe speak to the black department. So I wandered across the
filling
corridor.
A room with
the black department, of course, were only interested in George Benson and some other much more polite black music. So that's where it was left.
The marriage was prepared. The roses' fanfare announced the awesome moment. Swooning, dying, her hands pressed tighter and tighter to her heart, she was gasping, opening her mouth, searching for the kiss, which was to smother her.
Break it down, rock on, to the break it down, rock on, to the break it down, rock on, to the break, to the break on, break it down, rock on, break it down, rock on, break it down, break it down, break it down. We on a world tour with Mr. Malcolm McLean, we're going each and every place in Asia, Africa.
Of the record, and I hunted around, and I happened walking down Midtown Manhattan on 42nd Street to see two guys who were hustling, actually playing three card Monty, trying to freeze two. And if they put this money down, they could take a half an hour of airtime. It was one of these typical New York radio stations, which was like an ethnic radio station, where there would be 1 hour of Albanian poetry, 1 hour of Muslim teachings, 1 hour of Hungarian literature, for all the disparate ethnic elements of New York. And they called themselves the world's famous Supreme Team Show.
Supreme Team Show.
The way y'all play well music, the way you talk, I like the way you talk.
And Cheryl, may I ask you one more question?
Yeah.
Do you like scratching?
Scratching?
Yeah, what is it?
Scratching. Scratching.
baiser du condamné. This flower's in your sweet hand is just how I would feel to you. If you could only touch me now. Just a ghostly paper sign till you kiss me back to life. I'm soon to breathe the roses bloom. A thousand kisses to say goodbye, and then they say you'll never die. But only fun till the moon, and then they sing to you. A thousand kisses to say goodbye, and then they say you'll never die. But only fun till the moon, and then they sing to you. All your flowers fill my room and sing to me their happy tune, like nature's flower destined to die. A thousand hungry flowers loving you for hours and hours soon smothers me so tenderly. A thousand kisses say goodbye, and then they say you'll never die. But only fun till the moon, and then they sing to you. A thousand kisses say goodbye, and then they say you'll never die. But only fun till the moon, and then they sing to you. A thousand hungry flowers loving you for hours and hours soon smothers me so tenderly.